Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with today's announcement from the White House that President Obama is cancelling his summit meeting with Russian President Putin, but will attend the G20 meeting in St. Petersburg. Kimberly Martin, the director of the Harriman Institute at Columbia University, joins us to discuss how much the Snowden affair affected the decision and the other irritants besetting bilateral relations like Putin's assault on LGBT rights. Then we'll speak with media analyst Robert McChesney, co-author with John Nichols, of Dollarocracy, How the Money and Media Election Complex is Destroying America. Following the purchase of the Washington Post by billionaire owner of Amazon, we will look into how failing newspapers and magazines are becoming playthings for billionaires and discuss the collapse of the news media, in which professionalism has been replaced by commercialism as resources for reporting are cut and investigative journalism is all but eliminated. Then finally, we'll examine the most lucrative part of the Washington Post company that was not sold to Jeff Bezos, and that is the Kaplan for-profit division, which accounts for 55% of the company's revenue. David Halperin, a senior fellow at Republic Report, where he has an article, Bezos' Purchase of the Post Leaves Graham with Kaplan For-Profit College, which is also at the Huffington Post, joins us to discuss how the Post's former owner got the White House to water down rules that would have held these predatory diploma mills that saddle students with crippling debt accountable. I'm now speaking with Kimberly Martin, who is the director of the Harriman Institute at Columbia University and a professor of political science at Barnard College. Her books include Enforcing the Peace, Learning from the Imperial Past, Weapons, Culture, and Self-Interest, Soviet Defense Managers in the New Russia, and Engaging the Enemy, Organization Theory and Soviet Military Innovation. Her latest book is Warlords, Strong-Armed Brokers in Weak States. Welcome to Background Briefing, Kimberly Martin.
Ian, thank you so much for having me on your show. Just to clarify, I'm back to being a normal professor. I stopped being the Harriman director on July 1st.
Oh, you did? All right.
Yes.
Well, okay. I will revise that in the next time go around. But let me what was your response to, or your reaction to, first of all, these announcements came from the White House, but they were fairly heavily telegraphed by President Obama in a conversation with Jay Leno on The Tonight Show. So it's pretty amazing, isn't it, that this important news gets broken with a comedian?
Well, I think that nothing that happened has been really unexpected. It was very clear as soon as Putin made the decision that Snowden would receive temporary asylum that Obama really had no choice at that point except to cancel the personal part of the summit with Putin in September in Moscow.
So when the president talked about Putin, it was pretty. It's pretty clear that they really don't have a particularly good relationship. That shouldn't come as a surprise. It's also, I think, your point is well taken that when he announced that he had that he was giving Snowden a year's political asylum, it occurred to me that he knew that what would follow. But what the president said here to Leno was interesting. Just about Putin, he said, there have been times when they slip back into Cold War thinking and Cold War mentalities. And what I consistently say to them and what I say to President Putin is that that's the past, and we've got to think about the future. And there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to cooperate more effectively than we do. So I guess that's a little window into the kind of dialogue that they have. What do you think?
Well, I think there was a real opportunity this past spring that both Putin and Obama tried to take advantage of to try to make some personal headway in the relationship, even though the politics on each side are very difficult for domestic political reasons on both the Russian side and the American side. But in May, before the summit that happened on the side of the previous G8 meeting that happened in Northern Ireland, Obama sent a personal note to Putin outlining some possibilities for cooperation, and Putin responded with some ideas in return, and Putin chose to publicize this in the Russian press. So that was the first sense we had that maybe Putin was really trying to reach out to Obama now that both of them were in their next revised terms of office. I think that there was also some sense more recently despite some of the awkwardness of the June summit in Northern Ireland, that Putin made a comment that he was interested in, potentially working with Obama as a person, even if the politics were difficult in Washington, because he thought that Obama was sincere, just maybe not in control of his own political situation at home. And I think given that headway that was being made, Snowden really threw a wrench into everything. It was not an appearance in Moscow that Moscow valued particularly. Putin didn't ask Snowden to come. Putin tried very hard to keep the fallout from it limited. As July was going on, there were certainly earlier opportunities that Putin could have immediately granted asylum to Snowden, and he tried to head it off. But I think what's really happening is that Putin is facing a very difficult set of circumstances at home, not really among the Russian public, which doesn't have that much impact on policy, but instead among the personal relationships among other actors at the top. And really, it's a patronage political network situation, and Putin has to balance off the interests of various members of that network in order to keep his own hold on power.
Well, if he doesn't care about the narod, the public, out, and his most of his support is out in the country, the city where the Kremlin is, where he works, is hostile territory, isn't it? So, how does he navigate? How much does he care, for example, about what the oligarchs think? Sure, most Russian businessmen are more open-minded and pro-Western and my understanding is that they need a lot of investment in the energy sector. So these reactionary moves of his part, and particularly this anti-gay bill that the Duma passed that he's behind, it even has a kind of clause in it that allows for vigilantism. I mean, you'd have to go back to the Nazi period to find something so distasteful as that. So how much of Putin out on the limb in terms of offending the intelligentsia?
Oh, there's so many different points to your question, so let me grab onto two of them in particular. I think, first of all, there are just a wide variety of networks that are really pretty opaque, that we can't really tell who's in them for sure. But we know that there is some kind of a conflict happening at the very top in the Kremlin between people who are part of what's known as the Siloviki, the power ministry network, the people who are represented by the old hardline KGB factions, probably also supported by defense industry, certainly by some people in the oil industry. But then at the same time, as you mentioned, there is this economic interest. There are certainly very strong members of the elite in Russia who have an interest in trying to expand their trade relationships with the outside world. And so Putin is right now trying to keep a balance in between these networks at a time when all kinds of things are happening in Russia that really were not probably anticipated by the leadership as a result of the political protests that have been happening over the last couple of years, and then most recently because of the protests that we've seen with the Navalny case. So that's the first thing. The second thing on the gay rights issue, I think you're absolutely right. And I think what we're seeing in recent days is really a triumph of civil society at a global level, with people not being willing to sit back and allow the Russian policies to go forward without criticism and to make a hinge statement about it because of what's happening with the Sochi Olympics. And you're absolutely right that the parallel that's being drawn in the press and by some people in academia is indeed to the Hitler Olympics that happened back in 1936 when Hitler tried to put a good face on what was happening in the Nazi party and the growth of Nazism in Germany by hiding from the outside world just what was happening. And I think what we're seeing in the last couple of days is civil society at a global level saying we're not going to let what's happening to gay rights in Russia be hidden.
But the first network that you referred to, my understanding is that, it's been often referred to as KGB Incorporated, the
yes.
Oil and gas and the ministries, and particularly the military-industrial complex. I thought Putin put all of his people in those ministries and that's what he controls. So is that – you're saying that he's even finding problems with them?
Well, the thing to keep in mind is that when Putin came into power, it was a very sudden rise out of obscurity. And so when we're talking about Putin's people, it's not exactly clear. I mean, certainly over time, Putin has gained more and more authority and power inside the Russian state, so he has more control. But originally it was not Putin's people. It was a coalition of people that included Putin. But one of the reasons that Putin has had such a successful time in Russian politics has been his ability to try to make compromises and to try to balance all of the different interests that are really at the top of society. And even in the energy complex, we see some real differences between some of the oil industry, for example, Rosneft, the big state oil company, and Gazprom, the big natural gas company. Both are state-controlled, and yet their interests are often in competition against each other, and they do represent different factions within the elite. And so Putin does not have an easy job. It's not that he is an authoritarian leader who can just point straight down and tell everybody what to do. It's instead the case that there are a variety of informal networks that have different forms of political and economic power, and he really needs to balance among them.
Again, I'm speaking with Kimberly Martin, who is a professor of political science at Barnard College and formerly the director of the Harriman Institute at Columbia University. And her latest book is Warlords, Strong-Arm Brokers in Weak States. So in terms of canceling this summit after the president, of course, is going to go to the G20 meeting in early September in St. Petersburg. Apparently there are not going to be any side meetings with Putin, so they pretty much closed the door on that. How do you think it's playing? There's a certain indignation in the way that the Russians are reporting it, but, you know, going back to Winston Churchill's adage, you know, jaw, jaw, jaw is better than war, war, war. what do you think we're gaining and what are we losing?
Well, I think the important jawing is going to take place tomorrow, as long as the Russians don't decide to withdraw from it. And that's the meeting of the foreign ministers and the defense ministers that's happening in Washington, D.C., where the Russian foreign and defense ministers are meeting their American counterparts, Secretary of State Kerry and Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel. And so as long as that goes forward, that is much more likely to be a place where the truly substantive issues get discussed, where the issues that have real geopolitical significance, such as Iran, Syria, North Korea, potentially even further nuclear arms control, that's where real headway can be made. And in a sense, the personal meeting between Putin and Obama that was planned was diplomatic icing on the cake, maybe a little bit diplomatic fluff, more than where the real issues actually take place.
But what about the really key issue, which I understand is very, very important, and that is, and so far the Russians have apparently indicated they'll cooperate, the U.S. has a real problem in getting out of Afghanistan and getting all that heavy equipment out, and the Pakistanis have been gouging them. So they've decided to send everything, all the heavy equipment through the stands with Russia's blessing, but Russia could pull the plug on that. It would be a catastrophe to leave all that material, war material, behind.
Well, there's been cooperation on that one particular issue on Afghanistan. Also, there's been cooperation on North Korea. There's been a fair amount of cooperation on Iran. But you're right. At the moment, Afghanistan is the key issue of cooperation. Russia has been very cooperative on that now for at least 2 years. And I don't think we see any signs of Russia wanting to pull back on that for a couple of reasons. One is that the United States and Russia really share some important interests when it comes to what's happening in Afghanistan. You know, Russia is very much afraid of extremist Islamist insurgency in its own southern border regions. Russia is very concerned about narco-trafficking and what that means for drug addiction and the heroin trade in Russia itself. You know, for all of those reasons, Russia doesn't really have an interest in having things in Afghanistan go badly. I think it's also important to keep in mind that one of the things that motivates all of this informal networking that we've been talking about at the top in Moscow is economic interests. And Russia gets an economic payoff, as its allies do in Central Asia, for helping the United States with the withdrawal from Afghanistan. So it's not like they're just volunteering to do this out of the goodness of their heart, rather than getting both geopolitical benefits and economic benefits from the cooperation there.
So is this then more of a personal snub? Because Putin is clearly a vain man. He had some Botox recently, which I think makes him – I don't think it was entirely successful.
He's going to the bottom of the ocean.
Right. And the president was – I thought was pretty blunt on Jay Leno talking about Putin's anti-gay jihad, saying, I have no patience for countries that try to treat gays and lesbians or transgender people in ways that intimidate them or are harmful to them. And then answering the question about what will happen with the Olympics next year in Russia. The president said, I think Putin and Russia have a big stake in making sure the Olympics work. And I think they understand that for most of the countries that participate in the Olympics, we wouldn't tolerate gays or lesbians being treated differently. So it feels to me like there's a bit of a train wreck coming there, isn't it? Tons of money have been spent. Massive amounts have been embezzled. There's rumors that maybe he's going to marry his Olympic gold medalist girlfriend and throw this big party for the world. But maybe there's going to be a lot of room for him to be embarrassed.
Well, you know, it was really interesting on the Leno show last night that Obama also talked about his own difficulties as he's aging and playing basketball. And that was the same point that he raised with the summit meeting with Putin in June, trying to make a joke about the two of them having difficulty playing their sports as they aged. Now, unfortunately, Putin didn't really take that as a joke. And the reason is that for this need to appeal to his internal network, appearing to be strong is very, very important to Putin. That's part of the reason why he can't let the United States be seen to be pushing him around. He has to be seen as standing up to American pressure. But it's also why he dove to the bottom of the ocean recently. When Obama tried to make that joke about both men aging and therefore having a more difficult time playing sports when he met him in June, I'm not sure whether Obama realized that he was really cutting very deeply at something that mattered a great deal to Putin's projection of power at home, which that is that he has to seem like the super athletic macho man who's in control of everything. I think that the biggest concern about the Olympics is probably from the Russian perspective, much less on the gay rights issue. I don't think that no matter what happens on that issue, I don't think that that's going to be something that really harms Putin all that much among his core constituency. Because unfortunately, I don't think at the moment that that gay rights is something that has all that much popular appeal in Russia. The society in general tends to be more conservative than the United States. And so I don't think that particular issue is going to hurt him at home no matter what happens. But I think a real danger of the Sochi Olympics is the possibility of some kind of a terrorist threat. As you know, Sochi is right on the border of the North Caucasus. What has sort of fallen on the wayside in news reporting in recent weeks with everything that's happening with the Snowden case is the fact that there's still, you know, quite a bit of violence that's happening in that region some of the leaders of the North Caucasus insurgency have indicated that they intend to target the Sochi Olympics.
Well, Kimberly Martin, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Kimberly Martin, who's a professor of political science at Barnard College and was formerly the director of the Harriman Institute at Columbia University. And her latest book is Warlords, Strong-Arm Brokers in Weak States. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with Robert McChesney about how media properties are becoming billionaire playthings.
Back in the USSR. Well, the delivery girl.